WCHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on fireitupwithcj.com and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Welcome into Fire It Up with CJ. I'm Cassandra and I'm here with you today. We are now.
Hi,
CJ.
Hey, everybody. This is live from the headquarters of CBS. It's a Fire It Up with CJ show. Now you can find us on fireitupwithcj.com. It is June, and in June, it's really all about the focus of this month is exploring what it will take to live in balance and harmony with the environment. Today, we actually are going to take this opportunity because it's halfway through the year. Can you believe that?
I can't. I refuse.
I know. It's just kind of shocking to think that we're halfway through the year. And I actually thought, well, let's use this as an opportunity to contemplate, you know, how things are going. And today we're going to be looking at the limits of the Earth's capacity to serve us. I mean, it's becoming clearer that, you know, we're going to hit limits. It's kind of like we've been on an all day eating buffet, and we have stopped. And at one point, there will be limits on how much we can consume. So today we talked to Stan Cox, author of Losing Our Cool, who was named by Atlantic Magazine in 2012 the Reader's Choice for being a brave thinker. And a brave thinker is someone who they defined as someone who's risked their reputation, fortunes, and lives in pursuit of big ideas. So today we're going to be discussing his next big idea. So welcome, Stan.
Oh, hi, CJ.
It's great to have you here, and I'm excited to talk about your book, your new book, Any Way You Slice It, The Past, Present, and Future of... Your new idea is?
Rationing.
Rationing. I didn't cue it up. Maybe I should have had a drum roll. Would that have been better?
Right. Well, yeah, it's been referred to as the equivalent of shouting an obscenity in church. So a lot of people don't like to hear the word.
I know. I love one of the reviews on your book review on Amazon. It's like, next to hemorrhoids, people do not
right.
want to talk about rationing. And, in fact, when I was writing the marketing promotions, I thought, I don't know if I can use the word rationing because people have such a negative reaction to it. It's kind of sad.
Well, people, when I was going to be writing the book, there were people who said, well, use some other words, but I thought it's better to attack the concept head on because a lot of people who don't think that we're consuming too much or affecting the Earth's ecosystems too much and don't want to see us pull back, that's the word they use. They say, well, if we do that, we'll have rationing, not realizing or not admitting anyway that we ration all the time. It's just a matter of how to ration.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of budgeting. Do people have less of a response to budgeting, or do people have a negative response to that as well?
Well, you know, people, yeah, that's a pretty well accepted idea of budgeting, but it's somewhat different from available. Supply of something is not sufficient to meet all the demand for it. And generally that happens because of some kind of an emergency or war or other calamities. But it could also happen if we intentionally try to limit the quantities of resources we use or the quantities of pollution we produce. That's really the big decision, is to put limits around our economy. If we did that, then if prices then were just left to do what they would do, they would go up because there'd be a lower supply and more demand. That becomes very unfair for a large segment of the population who would no longer be able to afford what they need. Mm-hmm. And that's when some kind of fair shares rationing becomes necessary.
Right. So you were cutting in and out, but what I think I heard you say is that at one point we're going to have a limit in our supply of these valuable resources, whether it's the amount of carbon emissions that the Earth can take, or the amount of water, or even the amount of health care that we consume. And so if we were to let market economy dictate, then what would happen is those supplies diminish, your prices would go up. But when we start thinking about the prices going up for water, then that's a fairness issue, which is, does that mean, is it fair for certain people to have water and others not to? Is that what you meant by that? When I missed parts of what you said because I was fading in and out. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, sorry. Yes, that's right. And water is a resource that we're accustomed to seeing rationed all the time. When certain localities have a drought, they will limit lawn watering and things like that. More severe needs for rationing have come in wartime, when there is a limit on what's available to the consumer economy because a lot of resources are going elsewhere. And that's when you get this often this hyperinflation. But if the government says, okay, we're limiting prices, there's not going to be war profiteering for basic essentials, the price is limited to this amount, then unless you have some fair shares method of sharing resources, you have a lot of social strife and shortages and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, one of the chapters that you have in the book is about water rationing, and what I thought was sad, but is the reality in certain countries like India, is that, you know, people need at least 13 gallons of water to sustain just a quality of life, right, for just day in, day out use. And in those countries, people get less than that, right? I mean, so if in a world of rationing, we would have, you know, 13 gallons of water each household. Is that what it would look like, or what do you think it would look like if we went to a world of rationing with water?
Yeah, well, you know, water is always a local issue, and there are places in the world that are always going to be water limited in arid regions of the world, and then there are other places where there are high densities of population, and that would be the case, say, in Mumbai, India, where the city goes to extraordinary efforts to get water to every part of town, and a lot of places don't get it at all. But if you look if you do a news search in any given month and search for water rationing, it's happening somewhere in the world, many places in the world all the time. Recently in Dublin, Ireland, of all places, very wet place there, they were having to ration water. It's a pretty much an everyday occurrence in places like Amman, Jordan, or cities I've lived in India, where your water may only run for 30 minutes a day coming from the city, and so you better get the water that you need during that time.
Yeah, that was kind of a shocking. You don't appreciate how critical water is until you think, Oh, if I lived in Mumbai, Mumbai, you know, from 8 to 8:30, there's water coming out. And if I'm not there with my gallons of jugs of water, I'm not getting any water for the day or the week or whatever. I mean, it's kind of shocking. And because sometimes, and from your book, it's sometimes water doesn't even come out every day. Is that right?
Well, the thing that impressed me in that one small neighborhood in Mumbai is the kind of social organization that's necessary to make sure that with only 30 minutes of water running and there's only one tap, it's a pretty high volume tap, but there's only one tap running for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
The
God.
Highly choreographed routine that the people of the neighborhood go through, filling pots and hauling them back to their homes, coming back and filling more, and they make allowances for people who live farther away, and everybody gets what they need. But it's they actually had to fight for that 8 to 8:30 p.m. slot. It was coming on at something like 3 in the morning, which
Oh my God.
Was totally unacceptable.
Oh, my God. I hope we don't reach that point. I mean, when you and as I was reading through your book, I kept on thinking, when will this happen to us? Is this going to happen to me when I'm 90, or going to happen to my kids? I mean, when do you think, you know, based on all of the research that you did, is rationing? I'm part of what I'm hearing you say. Rationing is already a reality. So get over your issues with the word rationing and whatever thing it means to you, because it's happening already. But when do you see this as being a worldwide phenomena?
Right. It kind of depends on which resources we're talking about. And the four that I focused on were energy and carbon emissions, which can kind of are sort of rationed at the same time, then water, food, and medical care.
Mm-hmm.
Medical care, as you say, a lot of resources, it's already being rationed. Right now, we do it by discriminating against certain groups of people, like those who don't have adequate health insurance. Mm-hmm. More sensible rationing would involve discriminating against ineffective treatments that are not worth the cost. And that mm-hmm. That could be where, if we finally come to our senses, that may be where we first see rationing. And it has happened in some parts of the world. The thing with carbon emissions is interesting. That is, true rationing isn't happening anywhere right now, but there have been proposals discussed in Britain about how a nation could assign a certain annual quantity of carbon emissions that's the right of every citizen, and you would receive credits every year into your carbon account to produce that many emissions and you would have to spend those credits when you buy fuel for your car or pay your utility bills. Those would be the main places that you would use them.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually debated in Parliament. It hasn't been passed into law there or anywhere. But that either rationing by carbon emissions or rationing fossil fuel use could, in the next couple of decades, we could see that.
Yeah, and it would make sense that that would happen. I guess the thing that's interesting and the point that you bring up in the book is we have to start rationing because, you know, oil will run out, and it will run out. There's not as if we can ration something that doesn't exist.
Right. And even if you know, people are very impressed now by these huge reserves of unconventional oil. And even if we did decide to exploit those at the huge environmental costs that it would require, and even if we did get access to a lot more natural gas and oil, that would be an even bigger disaster if we decided we would burn it at the current increasing rate around the world that we are. So it's going to be a case of a kind of an unprecedented thing. Rationing before has always been done in the case of absolute scarcity, where scarcity is imposed by some outside mm-hmm. forces. This would have to be voluntary kind of scarcity, where we said mm-hmm. there is a ceiling as a nation or a world that we're not going to burn more fossil fuel than this each year, and then figure out how to live within that limit.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to be talking more about that precisely, fossil fuels and greenhouse emissions and what rationing may look like. We talked about England, but we're going to dive into that a little bit more. So we have Stan Cox, whose book, Any Way You Slice It, looks at a potential future of what we'll encounter if we don't have voluntary limits on ourselves, if we don't stop ourselves from eating at the all-you-can-eat buffet. It is not an all-you-can-eat buffet. So.
Right. Yeah. The chicken runs out eventually.
Exactly. Okay, folks, make sure to subscribe to us by going to www.firedupwithcj.com, and you'll get a schedule of upcoming shows, articles, and be eligible to win freebies. We'll be right back.